Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Well, hello everybody. Thursday, which means it's time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast featuring our brilliant producer Josh Garlop and Golden Tonsils Mark Reddings himself in the studio to add some flavour and grit to our commentary on this round. Guys, we're looking forward to Dreamtime in Perth. Remarkably selling out as quickly as it did in 17 hours. Both our teams have massive games this weekend. Fremantle to play the Western Bulldogs at Optus Stadium on Sunday and West Coast to play Carlton at the SCG in a game I would have thought West Coast needs to get one back, having dropped one at home last week against Essendon. And Carlton would need to win to stay in the race for the eight, I'd imagine. So that's a big game.
I reckon Quarters, in the words of Mark Williams after he won the premiership, this is, I think, to most of us, Alan Scott, you were wrong because I didn't think we'd get a full house.
Well, I did. We had this debate. Was it you I was debating with in the sports department last week?
May not have been me, but that's a great effort to have a sellout for a game like this. I shouldn't have doubted the public of Western Australia.
Well, build it and they will come. And we got the marquee game, and I'm delighted that we've filled this stadium, and I think we can do it justice. We did ask them, if you want to make a statement about missing out in last year's grand final, make it, and they've made the statement.
We'll get back to that a bit later in our juicy topic of the week. As always, we are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call the Gambler's Helpline on 1800 858 858 if you're running into any difficulties. The AFL has managed to cobble together round 12 under increasingly different circumstances. How much further do you think we can get unless the situation changes dramatically in Victoria?
They have to be swift on their feet. It will be really interesting. We've seen Beveridge already flag the possibility they're coming here. He's suspicious they may be here for longer. Mm. They're playing the Eagles, I think, 2 weeks down the track. So he feels they may bring that forward. They're just going to have to be adaptable, versatile. I don't think we're going to see any games in Vic for a little while.
So what does it mean with the 7-day extension of the lockdown? Obviously, it's not great news for the Victorians. Does that ring pretty strongly in the back of the AFL's mind as to what their next step is? Because that essentially means they're not going to be able to have crowds for, what, a couple of weeks minimum?
So there's two cases in Victoria today, which I guess is trending, if you believe in the trend is your friend, it's trending in the right way. But given how virulent this strain seems to be.
50% more.
They're going to have to get down to zero and maintain zero for several days before they really come out of
Where would we stand with that in terms of us opening our borders up again?
28 days before we let Victorians in without any quarantine. That seems to be the previous.
That was the previous rule. And given how virulent this strain has proven to be, I would imagine, even though our government appears to have shifted a little bit in the way it treats these things, I would imagine they would take a pretty firm view on this one.
It's going to be fascinating to see what they do next week with the fixturing.
Imagine Travis Old going into this job, what, a couple of years ago? Thinking, well, you know, it's a challenge and there's so many variables. Not one person in the history of football could have predicted the curveball that he has been given as a fixturing guru that he has.
So West Coast were fixtured to play the Bulldogs here at some point, were they not?
Yes.
So you imagine that could happen. And both our teams, I think, were fixtured to play Richmond here at some point.
Thursday night for the Eagles, yep.
So it may be that both those teams stay and one plays Fremantle and one plays West Coast, and that enables this end of the competition to get another week out of the way. Well, but it's elsewhere that becomes the problem.
Well, that can work. I believe the AFL has given the AFL Players Association, let's call it a loose confirmation that about 3 weeks will be the longest they're staying away at the moment.
Yeah, and Gil McLaughlin's put out a video to the players suggesting they will do everything within their power to prevent going into hub life this year. And the most, I guess, notable player that's put his hand up and said, look, I'm not comfortable about this, is Jack Riewoldt that we've seen. There's probably others that have come out. And his situation with the young family, I get it. People will say, hang on a sec, you've got a job to do. I can see where he's coming from, depending on what is put in front of these players.
I have no issue with that at all. Interestingly, Trent Koch in the news this morning wasn't going to come over because his daughter is sick. I believe that he has spoken to his wife and he is prepared now to fly over, so he'll be playing in the dream time on the Swan.
Personal circumstances have to dictate whether players can do it or not, and your family has to come first. If there's family reasons that prevent you from coming, you shouldn't come. And that applies.
And if you don't want to come, you shouldn't have to. I don't think it should count against you either. It just gives another young player the opportunity.
You're saying we've come from a fair way when cricketers used to maybe have their partner giving birth on the other side of the world, and they'd say, well, I've got a third test match to play in Antigua, so I'll just send me some pictures. We have come so far, and it's a positive for all concerned.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's widely agreed. We've come a long way on a lot of issues, and that is just one of them. All right, mid-season draft.
Mm-hmm.
Four players taken from Western Australia, which I think is a good outcome.
It is.
Interestingly, Gold Coast took their ruckman from somewhere else after having a lot of talk about maybe looking around here. Brisbane took a ruckman from Western Australia. Kalen Lane, the Denmark boy, got picked up.
Seen a bit of him play Colts for Claremont. And look, he's got some tricks and he's got some ability. So I get the feeling Brisbane, well, quite clearly, given his age, they're not looking at this as a short-term scenario. They think he's got some long-term prospects, which I think is great for the young man to get that opportunity. And he's one name that didn't come up all that regularly during the discussions, but he gets his opportunity. I commentated West Perth and Perth last weekend, and Robbie West's son Connor West picked up. Look, he's a solid waffle player. I wouldn't have put him on the radar, but that's the beauty of the mid-season draft.
Does it tell you that West Coast wants a now?
Possibly.
Player. And clearly midfield run's an issue for them, and clearly the balance between talls and shorts is an issue for them. And I would add to that, I think a lack of trust in their young midfielders at this point in their career. That doesn't mean they're writing them off. It just means right now they clearly don't think Xavier O'Neill, Zane True, the likes of those players are quite ready to compete at the level they need them to compete.
He's got the other thing that the Eagles need too. He's got the mullet.
He does, yes, although Liam Duggan sideline for the moment. Matty Parker's the other interesting story. And it's terrific to see him. He had a good first season with St Kilda. Season two, COVID impacted. He lost his way, I guess, in terms of selection and being part of that lineup. But to get the call, heard him talking last night about the process. He's purchased tickets to go and see the Dreamtime game.
Great story, that.
And that is a great story. The other great story which reminded me, going back many years, and gentlemen, you might recall this, Dale Kickett. There was almost like a mid-season trade or draft going back 20, 30 years ago, and he ended up being picked up by the Saints out of Claremont, I think it was, off the top of my head, and he played the next week at Subiaco Oval against the West Coast Eagles representing St Kilda.
What about Russell Green? It's mid-80s, not mid-80s, much earlier than that, about 1980, trains with St Kilda on the Thursday night. Gets home from training, gets a phone call from Hawthorn captain Don Scott saying, you've just been cleared to play for Hawthorn. You're playing on Saturday. Turns up at Waverley on the Saturday, gets out of his car. A couple of Hawthorn players say to him, mate, you're at the wrong ground. He said, no, I'm now playing with you. And went on to a very decorated career with Hawthorn. That's a remarkable story.
And he's a great story, isn't he? He showed what was possible, became an elite runner.
Yes.
Became that big, hard-running mid. And
let's just say he was probably caught up in the St Kilda system before that point.
The social club,
not
you
quite
mean.
Getting the best out of his foot.
The social club, you're saying?
It's up there, fellas. It's up there.
Memorable three-quarter time address by the captain.
Tell us stuff.
Trevor Barker. So, of course, the St Kilda Social Club was famous for late-night shenanigans.
Yes.
And also for, I think, probably Bayside blonde ladies who used to turn up at the social club looking for eligible footballers. And Trevor Barker, one famous day when they were getting a shellacking at Moorabbin, pointed to the social club and said, boys, we know it's up there. It's all up there waiting for us, but you've got to put in on the field.
Very true. We have gone back a few years. In a nutshell, though, are we comfortable? Look at Josh. He's saying, well, this is another world for him.
Well, it is another world when you think about trying. When you think about something like that happening today.
Oh, yeah.
The mid-season draft, per se, are we comfortable with?
Oh, look, I think it's, why not? I mean, it gives some players the opportunity when they would have missed out. I think it's great. Will Collins also, we should mention, from a defender from Swans, also going to West Coast. So I like the mid-season draft.
There'll have to be some negotiations between West Coast, West Perth and Swan districts because there is this rule in place that the Waffle Clubs asked to be put in place when West Coast wanted its own Waffle team, that basically any players taken in a mid-season draft were to remain with their Waffle Club. I suspect that is subject to individual negotiation.
Yeah, West Perth. West Perth's the one that Connor West is one of their midfielders alongside Nelson and Black, etc., whereas Will Collins was playing a bit of reserves footy for Swans. So I think there's an argument there. Well, West Perth have to come to the party because
it's a bit untidy.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the impact it can have on a Waffle team, and it shouldn't, but let's look at the bigger picture. I think I just feel that they should be playing with their aligned clubs. I think if you're in, you're in. It just seems a bit untidy for me.
I think there are two bigger pictures, though. Quarters is the one you just mentioned, and the other one is protecting the integrity of your second tier competition. And I think if you have strong, vibrant, and viable second tier competitions, then at the end of the day, if we look locally, West Coast and Fremantle win out of that. Their players coming through, like at West Coast, Zane True, at Fremantle, Sam Sturt, they play in a stronger, more competitive competition, and they develop better and they're more ready to play AFL footy when their time comes. So I think they need to be careful. I think the Waffle Clubs were very grateful for West Coast to agreeing to that condition, but this is the test of that condition now, isn't it?
Yeah, but just going back one step, you talk about the integrity of the competition. I suppose for someone like Matt Parker, who started this season at South Fremantle, obviously the premiership with South was the end goal if he was to stay there all season, but that carrot mid-season to play good footy and just keep the dream alive, from a player's perspective, I think it's pretty good. I think
he seems the most likely too. He's the sort of player that can light it up in a quarter, in a half of footy. I mean, I liked his form with St Kilda a couple of years ago. I've had faith in him. I think he can achieve something.
There is absolutely no doubt that for the players, any player offered this opportunity is going to jump at it. But having said that, future players looking to develop their craft in a second-tier competition, we also need to be mindful of that. It's very much a six of one, half a dozen of the other sort of an argument. All right, so other players taken. You mentioned Connor West. Also, Ashley Johnson taken by Collingwood from Sturt as a link to Halls Creek and is a rally of a lot of the young players taken out of there.
So we've got six from up in that region.
That must be the highest percentage from the lowest population in terms of the numbers up there. That's just an extraordinary.
It is a great story.
Per capita ability to have players drafted, and we know Claremont's got such a fertile zone up there and even down south. So one of the great stories is seeing some of these young men come through.
Some interesting stories at the top of the list. You look at Jacob Edwards, drafted by North Melbourne, ruck forward. They like the look of him long term. Jai Newcombe, who Hawthorn picked up number two. Now, he's been playing with Box Hill. Now, a complete endorsement from Sam Mitchell. He put a price tag on his head. The mid-season, it's a confusing one, and I think that was put in place by Hawthorn to protect him so they could get him later in the mid-season draft. But they picked him with pick two anyway because I think they thought someone might pounce. Interesting one there. Couple of ruckmen taken. Ned Moyle to Gold Coast. Now, they're in need of a ruckman. Big raps on him. And also Alex Murkoff, who Carlton picked up. Two players to watch out for.
All right, so let's get into round 12. Let's see if we can tip the punters a few winners. How'd you go last week, boys?
Seven.
I said if you could get that first game between Melbourne and the Bulldogs you're sailing home. We both got it wrong. Duff, kudos to you, the tick, but of course I didn't think that Essendon beat the Eagles. So
no.
I think
there were the two that I dropped.
A couple missed, but Duff, you'd be around the eight, I'm tipping.
Yeah, I got eight out of nine. I didn't see I did wonder about the Eagles game when I saw they'd picked Elliot Yeo, and that's certainly how it panned out. Obviously, we weren't aware of that when we did the podcast last week. So another top-of-the-table clash, Melbourne versus Brisbane. Melbourne put their credentials forward in their win over the Western Bulldogs last week. Brisbane, I think we've all kind of privately believing Brisbane is the form team in the competition at the moment. At Tab Touch, Melbourne is $1.81. Brisbane is $2.03. That's an interesting market for this one. Which way are you going, guys?
I'm going to go Brisbane. Look, I'm really intrigued to see how they get. They've won six in a row. They've claimed some pretty big sculpts too: Port Adelaide, Richmond, GWS. I really want to see how they're going to go right now against this side. Melbourne v the Dogs last week was fascinating. I suspect that the Western Bulldogs backed their own game style against Melbourne's and came off second best, so they won't be doing that again. They'll certainly be protecting the corridor in future. Be interesting to see how Brisbane go. Melbourne, a great intercept team. Brisbane, probably the best team once they get the ball forward. So that's, to me, is going to be the real fascinating matchup, how that Brisbane forward line goes against the structure of that Melbourne defence. But I'm prepared to back Brisbane to win this game.
Now, this is at Giant Stadium. Yes. Why Giant Stadium, not the SCG? Is that protecting the surface, is it?
It must be, because there's the other game there,
Sydney St Kilda, and then Carlton West Coast.
Yep.
Bear in mind, there's two other games.
So they thought don't have the three.
I'm assuming so. And if, yeah, Giant Stadium's available.
Well, it's available. Why wouldn't you use it?
I just reckon on a Friday night, you'd probably get a better crowd at the SCG in Sydney, wouldn't you?
Will you get a crowd at all?
Oh, it's not a nice journey up the Parramatta Road. What's wrong with it? It's the Golden Mile.
The Brisbane Lions and
it's
Melbourne.
A shocking drive up the Parramatta Road. It's an appalling drive.
It's about, and then the traffic.
And it ain't that pretty when you get to your destination either, I can tell you.
No, it's a pretty boring part of the world.
Look, we've got a feel for the D's here. This was going to be at Traeger Park. They were talking about 800K into the coffers. And so we feel for the D's. They're up and about, and they probably deserve. Finally, they got the match they wanted at that venue, and it's been moved.
They could have shifted it here. I reckon they would have pulled a crowd here.
They would have pulled a crowd here.
Yeah.
Might have got some of that 800K back.
Yeah, I reckon we got the right game here, though.
That we have.
We'll get on to that.
This is a really tough game to try and break down. And as you say, you've got the great intercept mark defence of the Melbourne side as opposed to the excitement of what the Brisbane brings to the table. And they're kicking scores, aren't they? Look, 129 points against the Giants, 102 against Richmond, 124 against the Gold Coast. And I'm leaning towards the Lions just because I know they can kick a score. And it's a toss of the coin, very difficult. Melbourne, they've hurt me this year because they just keep showing up time and time again. It depends also whether guys like Lester and Lachie Neal, where they're at with their...
Well, Lachie Neal's on the plane, isn't he? So we're expecting him to be named and we're expecting him to play.
Mind you, they've been going all right without him.
Absolutely, but it's not a bad addition.
McCluggage, Lions, and this is going to be a good matchup with the midfields too.
I'm going Brisbane, but I'm happily convinced otherwise.
Brisbane for me, interesting column talking about the inclusion of stars and the exclusion of stars.
Yeah.
Great column by Paul Hazelby today talking about the departure of a star, not necessarily doom and gloom for a footy club, and asking the question just how important are the superstars in the end result. All right, Sydney versus St Kilda, SCG Saturday. Sydney with Tab Touch, $1.35. St Kilda, $3.20. I suspect that has a lot to do with the venue and a lot to do with St Kilda's form as opposed to Sydney's form.
I would have tipped Sydney even at Marvel Stadium.
I would have.
I'm not St Kilda. Do we trust them at the moment?
No.
There's just too many question marks with their best and their worst. Sydney, look, let's be honest, they're in finals contention. St Kilda for mine aren't.
Buddy Franklin, I'm told, was a bit iffy. Came out of last week's game a bit sore, but I'm told at the moment he's playing, so that could be significant.
Expect him to be a late withdrawal. Buddy's worth 5,000 people through the gate. He'll come out about half an hour before the game.
They won't rule him out now, that's for sure. I pick Sydney with a fair bit of confidence in this game. St Kilda, I have very little faith in. Must be very frustrating to be a St Kilda supporter at the moment.
Skeet, Sydney for you?
Yeah, going Sydney, SCG. They did enough against Carlton. They've still got the mids and Buddy or no Buddy. I just still like the way they're going about it, and they're going to be probably playing finals.
Sydney for me. We need St Kilda to do something for them to be worth talking about, so let's move on to the next game. Adelaide versus Collingwood. The fly-in, fly-out Magpies at Adelaide Oval Saturday afternoon. Adelaide $1.50, Collingwood $2.65 with Tab Touch.
Forget what's happening on the ground at the moment. Every headline is focused on the Jeff Brown presidency, and we have spoken about this a fair bit. You're about to get to the health minister, health authority in South
Collingwood
Australia.
Collingwood is a good one, yeah.
It's fascinating where this is ending up. I know it's veering away from Adelaide Collingwood, but wow, a club that was so appearingly appeared to be well run for 23 years with Eddie, albeit some little potholes along the way. And Eddie last night coming out saying he's not having much influence on what's happening at Collingwood. Although he has spoken to Cordy, he has spoken to Brown, he is organising sponsorship for the club. He's got some fingerprints there.
You know, there. Really interesting developments there, though. So we're talking Jeff Brown saying, I want to challenge Gordon members. Four of seven, so balance of power. Jodie Sizer, who's one of the vice presidents of that club, the first Indigenous board member, she's come out and she has said, I will not serve under Jeff Brown. Now, given her background,
and
I would suggest with the Do Better report, I would suggest that's significant for Collingwood right at the moment. So the other thing they're saying is we're not stepping aside for you. You want to spill, that's what's going to happen because show me your blueprint. There is none at the moment. Show me what you plan to do better.
Or show me who you mean to bring with you.
That's right. There's no one at the moment. He won't announce it. So I think he needs to put some cards on the table. But really interesting what's happening there right at the moment. And it's an evolving story.
Is this just on the back? If they'd won four or five more games this season, would this be happening?
No.
Well, it happened. It started last summer, didn't it, with their mismanagement?
It did, but they effectively changed the authority there, changed the president. If their on-field results were better, and I say four or five more wins and in contention for the eight, would this discussion be happening?
This is not so much being caught between a rock and a hard place. This is being caught between the fireplace and the fire. Mark Corder served on that board for a long period of time when all the list management miscalculations, the stuff that's brought them undone, you know, the stuff that prompted the Do Better report, he was a part of the environment when all that stuff was unfolding. But Jeff Brown, I mean, Eddie can say that Jeff Brown is not Eddie Maguire, but I tell you what, from the outside, it looks like Jeff Brown equals more of Eddie Maguire. So therefore, I don't know that either of the two options are that appealing to Collingwood people at the moment.
And I think the sentiment on Melbourne radio is exactly that. They're just fed up with it all. I think they want to see some fresh faces come in from the outside who perhaps are more representative of the blue-collar ethic.
I suppose you've got, Paul Lecuria's on the board vice president.
Well, they've unanimously signed a pact to say we will not be stepping aside.
And Christine Holgate, who has not been immune to scrutiny in the last year or so. It's a fascinating, from the outside, look, we won't get too much oxygen in WA for obvious reasons, but for a club as big as they are to be self-imploding as they are, it's extraordinary.
And don't forget that as a background to all this, the Collingwood players and their families must be complete quarantine before Collingwood gets on the plane to go to Adelaide. And then when they get there, they can't kick balls to the spectators in the
crowd. Advocate says, I haven't been to many games of footy, but I know that occasionally the ball goes into the crowd. Well, it goes into the crowd every time they have a shot for goal. So,
do you reckon the front bar might just use that tonight in some fashion?
Well, I can tell you, a few years ago, I was at Waverley and there was a St Kilda game and Tony Lockett was playing before he moved to Sydney and he's kicked a goal. They've rushed the ball back to the centre and played for about 10 minutes before the umpires raised his hand and looked at the footy and it's got Tommy Jones, year 10, Ringwood Primary School. So when the ball had gone over, this kid's footy has rushed back, played with it for 10 minutes. I think Plug had kicked a couple. So the kid's just waving frantically behind the goals. You've got my footy. You've got my footy. It's a great story.
It is. A bit like on the weekend, the Sydney Swans goal kick by Heaney in the stands. Little girl is showing the footy. She didn't want to give it back.
No.
As it turns out, the Swans found her and gave her another footy. A nice touch there. But in South Australia, dare I say this, that lady from the how much she'd be copping a fair bit of
they're a bit different in South Australia. I love Adelaide, but a lot of people don't. All right, enough on this game.
Yes.
Who, in a word, wins?
Adelaide. Tex Walker, really, again, he's been nursed through the season, missed a trip to Perth. He's having a really good season. I think Adelaide are showing enough to me to suggest they'll beat the Pies. Brody Grundy, massive out.
No Grundy, no Taylor Adams. So Adelaide for me.
Moving on to the Dreamtime match at Optus Stadium, Saturday afternoon, the long walk to the ground. Essendon versus Richmond. I think it's named after the person, not the distance.
I know.
Essendon versus Richmond at 17:40. $1.40 Saturday evening. Essendon are $2.55 with Tab Touch. Richmond $1.52. Are those odds right, Glenn Quatermain?
Yeah, look, I'm picking Richmond to win this game. I think Essendon is a compelling story. Did they got it right for late in the game against the Eagles. If you look at it, there's some interesting developments there. So Cochin, we know, has come back. Shane Edwards back into that Richmond side. No Nankervis, no Soldo for this game. So they're going to have to be inventive with the ruck. It'll probably be
Sean Griggs.
Well, they could debut Samson Ryan. They could use Marlon Pickett. They could use
Matthew Parker.
Matthew Parker won't be playing. They won't be doing a Pickett with him on Grand Final day. I would be very.
It'll be Coleman Jones.
But they like.
And backing up Marbia Chol.
Yes, but they do like their three talls. And obviously with Tom Lynch not playing. But do they have to against Essendon, who Andrew Phillips and. Duff, I believe they used Kyle Langford.
Kyle Langford, 191 centimetres tall, did some ruck work last week. He was praying he didn't get caught against Nick Natanui. managed to be up against Bailey Williams for most of his hit out. So I suspect they will go that way and they will look for run. There's a bit of the Richmond profile about Essendon, isn't there? Obviously, Rutten and Carosella came through Richmond on their way to the Essendon coach's box. They do look for those smaller players who can cover the ground, who can put a lot of pressure on. To me, I'm going to go with the Tigers. I think Essendon will be a very good team in 18 months' time, but I think the hype about them in the wake of their win against West Coast is a bit premature and overblown. I thought West Coast made a mess of it at selection last week, and I think they paid for it with 4 points. Let's not forget they were 5 goals up before they ran out of puff. And then let's not forget they couldn't run out of sight in a dark night.
You know, they are sitting here in wait though, Essendon. The one thing in their favour is they've been here for a couple of weeks. They're sitting here in wait. Richmond's, you know, out of its comfort zone. It's in Sydney waiting to come across. It's got to help.
Last year they're in the same situation. That to me for Richmond's not a major issue. Okay. But I do question why you say there's too much hype about that Essendon win, because it was described by some as the greatest victory in the club's history various stages last night. The best victory for a generation. I think they might have.
Might have gone all right in the 84 grand final.
Maybe the come from behind in the 93 preliminary final against Adelaide. Anyway, I thought it was pretty.
There's. You know what? We love seeing a team like Essendon, who's been down and out for a while, show some signs, and they've done that against the Eagles. I'm with Richmond again here. Mm. They've won their past 10 against the Bombers. I agree with Duff completely. I just think the young sides can get sometimes not carried away with themselves, but just a step ahead of where they should be. I think Richmond's that dour side that if they can just grind them down, turn this into a not such a shootout, just a shut down.
Get it on their terms.
Exactly. They can win.
All right. Carlton versus West Coast. SCG, we don't know why, on Sunday.
Hard game.
It's a really hard game.
So Carlton is a favourite here, guys. $1.85 with Tab Touch. West Coast, $2. I don't like where West Coast are at with the injuries, and I don't like where they're at with their team balance, but I don't have that much faith in Carlton either.
No, I'm not sure how Carlton can be the favourite in this game.
I think the Eagles midfield, again, when you look at Elliot Yeo's back, but still a fair way short, losing Kelly, they are a bit skinny in the midfield. That's an aspect that I think has to be taken into account.
They're vulnerable, but can Carlton take advantage of it? You know, for the top-end draft picks that Carlton has, and I said this to Quarters when we were on the West Live this morning, if one of our teams had that number of number one picks, top picks, first-round picks, and they were where Carlton is on the ladder, we'd be calling for a royal commission.
I agree. Carlton, to me, I just feel like they're almost there. They haven't been really taken apart this year, have they? And so I feel that they're almost there, which is why you're sort of tempted to pick them. But I think West Coast, if you look at the big picture, this is a massive game for them in terms of the top four. I mean, we said last week, if they lose a home game, they're back in the pack a bit, and they lost a home game. So they really need to nail this one.
Boys, I think you can draw a parallel between this game on Sunday and the game up at the Gabba against St Kilda last year when the Eagles
And
they won really down on numbers, and St Kilda had a fair bit to play for. It's just got that sort of shape about it. Now, Walsh, Cripps, they've got the midfield to take advantage of the centre square, the short ground. Obviously, they've lost. They haven't won at the SCG, the Eagles. Mind you, they haven't played Carlton there.
So, 1999.
Yeah, I think it's 8,000 in about 50 days. So, it's a long time.
Yeah, well, they've played Sydney there.
Exactly.
They play the ground pretty well.
Yeah, so
they should play the Prince song on the flight over.
Which is?
1999.
Oh, okay. Quarters, you just do
get
go
them in the mood. They are going to Sydney.
But going back, I think this is one of those matches, and look, I'm going to tip the Eagles, but with a real sense of uncertainty. I just think it's that similar type of game, Duff, to last year.
Yeah, I agree. I can't pick I'm going to pick Carlton just because of West Coast manpower and West Coast record at the ground. How much the record at the ground means, given they're playing Carlton, not the SCG.
Yeah, I don't think it
I don't have faith in Carlton. I just wonder whether West Coast needs to tweak their midfield a little bit. And to me, that's going to be difficult with the manpower they've got available. When they get Shuey back, when they get Duggan back, and if they get someone like West in there, a more mature body, if they get Mark Hutchings in there, just a more mature body.
How far is Hutchings away?
Well, he could play now.
He played waffle footy last couple of weeks. Has been good. And as we said on Tuesday, he's the type of player that, you know, he can run to a quarter main, run to a Duffield, and at his best, the coach just lets him be and he does his job. A good run with play, which the Eagles don't have many of.
No.
All right, so Fremantle versus the Western Bulldogs, Sunday at Optus Stadium at 4:40 p.m. The Dogs are at $1.37, Fremantle $3.10. Bit overs at $3.10, aren't
they? I think they're overs. Look, Fremantle had a good record against the Dogs here. Very good record. So they're very tempting, particularly as we expect. Tabana and Logue, they're going to get the bookends back. Very important against this Western Bulldogs side, who I suspect, and have been a bit disrupted this week, but I suspect, I think we've seen, they're a top four side. They'll finish in the top four. They're going to challenge. I'm prepared to back the Western Bulldogs to win this game. But I do like the look of Freo with those bookends back.
It's not the type of game if you're a top two, top three side. They've come off a disappointing defeat against Melbourne, quality side. But, yeah, you're right.
So, 3-10, though. Pretty tempting to have a crack at that.
It is. But, yeah, look, if the Bulldogs come here with the right mindset, they have got still, despite some of those injuries, they've got a midfield which will really stretch the Dockers. So
I think, you know, Treloar and Dunkley, they have got amazing depth in that midfield. But it's like we saw with GWS a few years ago. Once you lose a couple, it just dilutes you a little bit. And we're probably seeing a little bit of that, but they have got enough there.
I think they can get away with it against Fremantle.
There's some talent in that midfield still.
And they've still got Norton, et cetera. They've got the forwards to kick to the defence. They've done not much wrong this year for me to jump off the board.
Do they throw a sarong at Libba, given what happened, Melbourne did with Harms and
Libba
last week?
That is absolutely what Fremantle do. You've got to try and take one away from them. Given that they're already minus two with Treloar and Dunkley, try and take another one away from them. Lib is the one to
he's
go
the
to.
One, and he's the extractor. He feeds. Yep. He's arguably their most, not their best, but their most important midfield.
And so what does Bonton, Pirelli and Fife shake hands at the start of the match, toss the coin and say goodbye? They just completely run their own race?
Hopefully before they go in different directions, Bont gives Nat a few kicking tips on how to
he's
how
not,
go.
You know, 100% himself, but he normally nails a few.
And the Bont has a few issues defensively. We saw him get exposed a few times when having to stand one of the Melbourne tall forwards last weekend.
Geez, sorry. He can't do everything.
Yeah, I know he's not perfect.
He's a gun mid. He goes forward and catches it.
Yep.
And he's pretty good with the 1%. Can't do everything, the Bond.
Is he number one if we're to say in the competition right now, who's number one in the comp?
You know who the form player is? It's Clayton Oliver.
Yeah, it is. But if I can have a pick at any player to start building my team around, I'm picking the Bond.
Yeah.
And I love Clayton Oliver. Don't get me wrong. He's probably the best player in the comp right now, but I just like what Bont gives you.
I could name you anyone of 15 and I'd take any one of those 15. Yeah. I mean, look, to be honest with you, having Fremantle close to my heart and knowing their struggles down forward, I'd be ringing Harry Mackay.
Yeah.
That'd be the first bloke I'd be ringing.
If you're talking kicking issues, I watched him at the SCG last week. And
he wasn't great.
Well, he has his moments, but tell you what, he gets some looks.
He'll still fit right in at Fremantle if he struggles.
Still leading the Coleman.
No, exactly. Yeah. But he's a player. You're right. If he can get his kicking right.
Imagine how many he'd be ahead if he kicked straight.
Oh. Against Fremantle when they tailed them up by 7 goals, he was all over the shop and still kicked a bag.
I'm going to tip the Bulldogs, but I think this is a lot closer than the bookies have got it. I think Fremantle are in this game, but I want to see Fremantle play a stronger four quarters against a good team before I'm prepared to tip them.
Well, they lost, 46 points last week, 6 points after quarter time.
Yeah, look, I actually like their third quarter against Sydney and I like their second and third quarters against Port. The thing about the second and third quarters against Port is if I'm Justin Longmire, I'm going to the players and I'm saying that is the brand. that we play and that will hold us up against any team in the competition. But I'm also showing the first quarter and I'm only highlighting one stat. I'm counting the missed tackles and I'm pointing the finger at the players that missed them because there were some insipid tackling efforts in that first quarter. So I think it's kind of like glass half full, glass half empty for Justin Longmuir at the moment at Fremantle, I reckon.
Yeah, and we know at Optus Stadium, it's a completely different beast, the Dockers, as are the Eagles most times.
All right, let's move on to the Biggie Juice juicy topic of the week brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
Hello, Barry White.
It was all a dream. Juicy topic. He uses the same line every – at least he's recorded. He uses the same line every week.
Well, been doing this for 4 years, Ski. Don't just come in Johnny Come Lately and start banging our furniture.
Johnny Come Lately, that's fair call, cause.
I reckon Ski's happy to be
until
called
until
him
in the
Johnny
paper. Come. What's that? Until him in the –
until you're on the paper.
Until in the paper. Yeah, no, I'll just
– we do need to add a little skeet there in the background. Maybe coming in with a fist over the top or something like that.
What's the topic?
All right. The Dreamtime at Optus Stadium match sold out in 17 hours. The tickets were priced very reasonably. Quarters himself snapped up eight with two family packages.
Mm. Have you got a family I don't know about?
Yes, I do. Enough said on that.
He's got another family his family don't know about. We've kind of like rolled along with the way we price tickets in Western Australia. I suspect the pricing structure in Western Australia was set up for Subiaco Oval because the footy system needed us to generate a certain amount of income from Subiaco. It works for West Coast because West Coast can sell out the ground no matter what. But does it work for Fremantle and would Fremantle get a better result if ticket prices were more reasonable?
I'm going to sound like a pompous, ignorant media type because I turn up each week and put my pass through the gate and get through. Tell me the difference between the cost of what, say, you're paying quarters for to take the family on Saturday night to the footy.
Well, it's significant. I paid, so for eight people, four adults, four, it was $140-something. It's ridiculously cheap. It's great value. They filled the stadium. I agree with Duff.
So what does it cost to take, the same number of people to a Dockers game?
For most season tickets, you're looking at around $50 or $60 a game.
Per person?
Per person, yeah. And now it's cheaper for kids,
yeah,
because they're trying to encourage new members. But to me, it was a pricing structure that worked for Fremantle at Subiaco because they were able to get pressure on the gate. They were able to still get their 35,000 to 40,000 people through the gate. But a lot of their supporters, I suspect, at Optus Stadium are just happy to pick and choose their games, walk up if they're happy with the way the team's going, or if they're keen to see Fremantle play against a certain team. To me, there is no pressure on the gate and maybe they need to look at what they charge for season tickets.
And the other thing is, Duff and Skeet, is you go to the footy with the family, you're not coming out with any change of 200. If you talk, you go with two or three kids, you go buy some pies, chips, soft drink, mate. It's hurts the pocket.
So Fremantle have the sole decision in ticket pricing or does Optus Stadium have a fair
that's
chunk
a,
of that?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm not privy to that information. So I'm asking the question rather than having the answers. But the amount or the speed at which that game sold out, one, it speaks volumes for the occasion, but two, it speaks volume for the passion of WA football supporters. And given that most of the time you only get a choice between two teams in Western Australia and given that one of those teams is a virtual lockout every week, a Fremantle not capitalising on the market, you know, what would be a better financial outcome and what would be a better club development outcome? I suspect for Fremantle it's having more people there. And I suspect that given that West Coast can generate so much and maybe they change the royalty arrangements so that Fremantle draws more people and maybe West Coast takes a little bit more of the financial burden, maybe that's a better outcome for WA footy. I mean, what do you think?
I think so. Yep. A full stadium, I'll take any day of the week.
Surely, and from the Optus Stadium scenario, if they can get an extra 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 people through, as Quarters mentioned, as you well know, once you're in, not too many people. I mean, my wife would take the cut sandwiches, etc., and do the righty. But a lot of people go straight up, have a couple of beers. So off the back of that, I think it would be a win-win for both parties
because if they get a cut of food and beverage. And don't forget they have merchandising shops at the stadium as well. So if you get the people there, they are buying drinks, they are buying food, you're getting a cut of that income. If you're getting 15,000 more through the gate, that is a significant amount of money. And it probably more than makes up for the money you are losing in the price of the ticket. I just wonder whether I know the pricing structure works for West Coast, and West Coast is a massive club. I think the biggest club in the AFL. You'll have East Coasters will dispute that, but I don't think – I think when you look at the share that West Coast has on the WA football market and you look at the size of the WA football market, I think West Coast is the biggest club in the AFL.
On a broader level, what about this game, Dreamtime Saturday night, coming here through unusual circumstances? Does it open the window for – other marquee matches to come to this town under the right scenario, with perhaps government help, perhaps with the AFL having some input as to whether we can get these types of games here, not every week, but on a more regular basis?
What this does is it exactly puts us squarely in the game now. We can now go to the AFL and say, look what we've done, look how great a spectacle it was. Let's be in the market for other marquee games. Absolutely we should be. And I think we should aim for one a year.
And does it also put us in the market, given that there is a grand final contract in place until 2057, but there was no grand final at the MCG last year because there couldn't be, and there's got to be a reasonable chance there will not be a grand final at the MCG this year, given where we are at the moment. Should we be looking for a renegotiation of that contract and say, well, there's no guarantee that any venue in Australia can host the grand final. So we are putting our foot forward as the people who have what we think is the best stadium in Australia as at least the first fallback option if the game cannot be held at the MCG.
Needs support from the McGowan government, as we know, and whether he and his government threw everything at the last bid, only others can tell you, because I didn't see what was in the bid, but obviously they didn't go as hard as what the Queensland government did. But
I don't think they went at all. That's the problem.
Well,
anyway, I don't think it's not how hard they went. They didn't go.
But Duff makes a really good point here. And look, it's too premature to think about the MCG not hosting the grand final this year. But I think behind the scenes, there has to be a question asked if, as a standby or if, as a backup scenario, something like this happens in August/September in Melbourne, and we're in a healthy position, absolutely we need to strike this.
And even I think both Adelaide and Perth should be putting their foot forward and saying, what this has shown us is that, you know, we live in a global community. If something starts somewhere, it will go the length and breadth of the globe, which means that we can't guarantee that a certain venue will be able to host a certain event at a certain time. So therefore we need fallbacks, and here are the next best stadiums in Australia, and we want to be put on the register as being the ones you will go to if your preferred venue cannot meet your demands.
Which is why it was so important we got this one right, and I think so far so good we have got this one right. So
the light show looks, even just watching it on 7 News last night, what's going to transpire on Saturday night, and Duff and Quarters, big proponents for Saturday night football in the West. This is hopefully the weather holds off. I think we'll be okay. It'll be
little bit of rain.
Fantastic atmosphere, fantastic sight. I'm as excited going to the footy on Saturday night as I have been since, say, the prelim final, it's one of the best events I've been looking forward to footy-wise for a long time.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to everybody's favourite segment. It is time for...
Hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Skeet, you're knocking out idiosyncrasies that we built up from a year and a half of rapport. Listen, all right? Okay, just...
Shut up.
Any new sound effects? Any new sound effects for this?
There is. Oh, okay. I just downloaded it, but didn't actually hear it because I couldn't listen to it over the pod. It's one for a non-Perth but regional WA mailer. And what do you know? Let's head to Dino from Tassie. So that's a plane, unfortunately. G'day, crew. As a Mighty Lion supporter, just wondering what you can tell us about Caitlin Lane.
Caitlin. Yeah, I think you said Caitlin.
I did not, but yeah, go on.
Nah, well, I haven't seen a lot of him, but I have caught a few of his matches in Colts. He's athletic, he's raw, he's got a fair bit of bulk to put on in terms of weight, but that's pretty natural at that age. I can see no reason why he, long-term, won't be a great fit for the Brisbane Lions.
So 204 centimetres. Clearly they let Steph Martin go. There was a worry when Oscar McInerney was carrying the ankle early as to whether they had enough ruck depth. Clearly they've addressed that. This is a long-term decision, not a short-term decision.
Yep, absolutely. And terrific to see. We talk about the pros and cons of the mid-season draft quarters. This is one that you think, fantastic for a young bloke. It's not going to disrupt Claremont would be delighted with the result of this, in a broader sense.
Denmark player had a couple college offers, former basketballer as well. So we watched his draft videos last year for part of the West coverage. And, yeah, very, very tall, mobile, big. All right, moving on. Let's go to – oh, guys, we got a fan favourite.
Please make sure your seat back is upright and your tray table is secure.
Do you listen to the –
flight attendant? Yeah. Yes, I love it. I can't remember it that well because it's been a while, but I do love that sort of feeling of about to descend into whichever city we're heading to.
I'm normally into the travel mag and my first G&T by that stage.
Oh, so you're not looking up. I always feel awkward when they're doing their presentation. You've seen it 10,000 times.
Feel rude.
And then you're like, well, I've got it.
So I'm you're right.
Anyway, dear Josh, amongst West Coast injury problems, this is Luke from the Cayman Islands. He's back again. Amongst West Coast injury problems and general lack of form, what do you, do the three amigos, and that's you guys, think about the lack of a Lewis Jetta or a equivalent type player from the 2018 Premiership season? It seems that the Eagles are missing a damaging link between the halfback and half forward with that Jetta often would provide. He took ridiculously difficult kicks through the middle and dared to attempt what was often unachievable. A big underrated piece of that 2018 flag. Also, just wanted to say to flag Cayman Islands as a potential hub location for the rest of the season. There is no COVID here and a Popeyes fried chicken as well, drive-through.
Is Cayman Islands also a tax haven or not?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Let go back to the...
Won't do me any good.
No, me
no money to stash.
Don't have enough to put there. The reason that Alex Witherden is at the football club is because of the Lewis Jetta changeover. He's got a really good leg. He's kicking.
He's injured.
He's injured. That's a problem. But that's a replacement that they have earmarked for Lewis.
So it's really just bad luck at the moment. So they've just got a raft of injuries. Witherden would be absolutely playing and filling that role, but he's just not able to at the moment.
So Luke has referred to people who were there in 2018 that aren't there now. I mean, Mark Hutchings springs to mind. Strong game in the Waffle last weekend. If you're Adam Simpson, and given the close confines of the SCG, maybe an older, harder body, a person who will play a role for the team, is Mark Hutchings going to be in your team to face Carlton?
Put it this way, I haven't seen him in the Waffle, but the numbers suggest he's got to be close. If you're talking about players from 18, I mean, Nathan Vardy, I think he's just about – he's on the cliff, and Bailey Williams, I think, has got his measure in terms of the next option. So I don't think we'll see much more of Nathan Vardy at the Eagles unless there's absolutely a requirement for him. Hutchings is one of those. Venables obviously was in 18 and highly unlikely that he'll play again in my mind. So there's not too many outside that.
Well, he's
group.
On the long-term injury list
with
now,
Jared
of course,
Cameron.
Of course. So they could get some in the mid-season draft. I'd absolutely have Hutchings in the squad for this week, and I would be very tempted to play him.
Thank you very much. Guys, heading to Bingen up.
That's Quarters leaving his abode every morning.
I literally Googled... burnout sound effect.
Very good.
That came up. Pretty happy that that's going to stay. Alistair Cooper. Now, it's a bit long-winded, and he did apologise for that, but...
Alistair Cooper.
Yes. Are you thinking of the singer?
Well, Alice Cooper's just...
Well, he's not. It's not. He's not in Binging Up. Love the pod, guys. Great commentary on WA Footy and the world. Everybody seems to be upset about holding the ball, myself included. It is the most difficult umpiring decision to predict out... For sure. I think one of the major causes is the prior opportunity and its interpretation. Recently, I watched a replay of the State of Origin match from the 80s. During the telecast, they explained that a free kick would be awarded for holding the man. The umpire paid holding the man because the player laid a tackle before the opponent had control of the footy. Current players are allowed way too much leniency in the amount of holding they are allowed to on the player prior to the player taking possession. Arms shouldn't be going around the player or impeding them to have control of the footy. Surely this removes the need for prior opportunity call and encourages the continual movement of the ball. Why don't we, before changing the rules completely, take a look in the rear vision mirror?
Sometimes it's really hard because our game is played at a frenetic pace. Umpires who do a really good job have to make split-second decisions, and often it's in a tangle of arms. It's very hard. We can see – often our vision is a lot better, so I agree to a point. I think we need to you can't – grab a bloke or infringe a bloke if he hasn't got the ball.
Prior opportunity is an interesting one, and I had Craig O'Donoghue explain this to me, and often when players have incorrect disposal of the ball, but they haven't had prior opportunity, as Craig explained it to me, that's not a free kick. And we often think it's a free kick because we see a bloke drop the ball, swing his foot at it and miss. But provided he has not had prior opportunity and provided he's made a genuine attempt to dispose of the ball, it is play on.
Yep.
And not many of the commentators know that rule. So therefore, a lot of things are described as incorrect calls by the umpire when they're actually correct calls by the umpire. And sometimes when the umpire pays that free kick, it's an incorrect call, even though it satisfies the way we view the game.
So you need to have the prior and then it's incorrect disposal, as long as you've had the prior.
As long as you can determine what prior, which how is, long prior
and
is.
That's where it does get difficult at times for our officials.
Oh, it's a horribly difficult.
Is there a more difficult game in the world to umpire?
Wouldn't have thought so.
Probably not.
I can't think of
because
one.
Because the rules change so regularly. Like, tell me another sport, for instance, that changes or tweaks its rules as
plus
much as ours.
Plus it's a 360-degree game too, very difficult to umpire.
I reckon the correspondent has a point. You will often see taggers or accountable midfielders or defenders start the hold before the player has taken possession of the ball. You will also see them take the opportunity to dispose of him after he has disposed of the ball. And unless it's absolutely blatant, the umpire will call play on because they want the game to flow.
Of course, but any hold before the ball is in the hands should be paid a free kick.
Yeah, but it's not.
Mm.
And it's not because of what you said. It's an incredibly difficult game to umpire, and there's a lot of bodies around the ball, often bodies between where the ball is and where the umpire is.
Thank you very much for the email. This is guys, I'm going to require a bit of your imagination for this one, so, and also get some music for it as well. All right. Hi, Josh. I've been pondering Fife's woes in front of the sticks. Stick with me. If the left half of the brain is emotion, creativity, etc., etc., but also controls the right side of the body, and Fife is predominantly a right foot kick, then if Fife uses the right side of the brain, logic, accuracy, numeracy, thought, kicks with the left foot for goal, he would be a shoo-in for the Coleman medal next year. To summary, right foot kick equals power, left foot kick equals accuracy. Logic, right? Cheers, Andrew.
As Josh exits the flotation tank.
That is quite effective. Well done, Josh. That's outstanding. In fact, I once took a journey through Quarter's mind. It was a very short trip.
I can tell you it's a crazy trip. You don't want to do that. I can trust me, mate.
It's an interesting thing. I actually dabbled in mind control and that sort of stuff. Yeah, like years and years and years ago. And best explained to me was that your brain is the computer and your mind is the keyboard. So the things that you feed into your mind end up programming the brain. I suspect Nathan has a few too many negative thoughts in there when it comes to kicking at goal. And the one he missed on the weekend, incidentally, he kicked a real good one on the weekend. The left foot snap was a beauty. So maybe he should be a left footer. Mm. My brother, who's a left footer and an absolute, you know, he's a lefty. He does everything left. And when I was talking to him about Fife's goal-kicking ways, he said, well, he kicks with the wrong foot. And he was just speaking about the merits of kicking left-footed generally as opposed to anything specifically to Nathan. But, yeah, Nathan just needs to clear his head. And once he clears his head, he will kick more goals.
Thank you very much. Just on the back of that, we had another email whose name is escaping right now. I'll find it for the end. This is the final email for the day. My question is, goal kicking is pretty poor across the AFL, particularly from the Dockers, and the response is often, well, it's due to because the amount of running they do compared to the old days. I recall Tony Lockett saying something like, these full forwards nowadays run the length of the ground. I didn't do those lengths for a holiday. Can we deduce that it's hard to kick straight when you're knackered? When will the coach pick up that and tell a big-bodied full forward not to leave the 50-metre arc and don't worry too much about the fence if there's a turnover, leave that to the defensive forwards?
Well, it didn't hurt the Eagles last weekend. They were 9 straight at one stage. Yeah. So it's also, apart from the fatigue and other factors, it's where you're getting your shots at goal. I think that if you break that down, maybe that's an answer to maybe to some of Fremantle's problems, but technique, but also where you get your shots.
Good sides will push you to the pockets, and you see that every week. And, yeah, you want your shots in as directly in front as you can. I don't think there's any question, though. I still believe a little bit more time was spent in the past on goal kicking than it is now.
Well, they're limited in the amounts of kicks they can do because kicking is linked to things like OP. Yep. So therefore, the sports scientists won't want them having too many kicks of the ball every week. You know, the other thing, when you'll often see players drilling a certain thing, and then that will leave them with a shot on goal, and the shot on goal becomes an afterthought. And they'll do a cute little round the body one. This is a training, you know, a banana kick. That creates muscle memory, and then when the moment comes in a game under severe pressure, you do something like Rory Lobb did from the goal square on the weekend. Attempt a banana when a drop punt would have done the trick and miss.
Fair to say, we're more forgiving in that circumstance. If Rory Lobb from 15 out runs in, tries to kick the drop punt and misses, we're more forgiving than
we are,
the alternative.
Well, I think Nat Fyfe's kick across the body last week, it was frustrating to watch because it would have been a team lifter. I just wanted him, after that the great mark, I wanted him to go back and just slot one and make a statement. But you could see he rushed it. He took it as quickly as he possibly could. He missed it by a fair bit too. It was frustrating to watch. Just on the other point, which I'm not going to criticise sports scientists, but if it's your key forwards, I didn't see too many Lockett's or Dunstall's or Sumich's miss a lot of footy with OP just from their repetitive kicking. They're different style players.
It's a different game.
Yeah, but I mean, if you...
But to back you up, going back to the weekend, Jake Stringer, who'd had a pretty ordinary start to the game, kicked a really good goal, and we were commentating on radio, and within 30 seconds, he came off the ground. I think it was about 8 minutes remaining in the game. Game was still very much in the balance, and again, we're not the sports scientists, and we don't know how much volume he'd had in his legs for the course of the game. There's no way he would want it, and he came off. He was so upset because he felt that he'd lit the fire for Essendon, and he comes off the ground. So sometimes I just feel that there has to be a time where coaches or the sports scientists, someone intervenes and says, no, we're leaving Jakey out there. He just kicked it. You can tell he's up and about.
It's rubbish when they come off the ground after kicking a goal most of the time. But if it's your role as a key forward, what's your role as a key forward?
Kick goals.
It's to kick goals. The amount of effort that goes in getting the ball to you, surely it's incumbent on you to practice your goal kicking. Surely.
Thank you very much. That was Doug, by the way, and that's all the emails for today. We'll save the other ones for Tuesday.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have been brought to you by TabTouch. Get closer to the AFL action with TabTouch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call the Gamblers Helpline on 1800 858 858. Well, boys, we face more uncertainty. We have to be flexible and agile, but hopefully we've been flexible and agile enough to tip a few winners over the weekend, and hopefully we'll be talking about another round on Tuesday and not a pause in the season.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on The Game.
You know who? It's unbelievable!